This podcast was recorded Thursday, February 20th at 11.04 a.m. Things might have changed by the time you hear it.
Yeah, like Democrats running for president will gather for a peaceful yoga session.
Certainly sounds more relaxing than what we saw last night. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those shrewd politicians or snollygosters. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up on the podcast, Mike Bloomberg makes his debut on the presidential debate stage.
I'm a New Yorker. I know how to take on an arrogant con man like Donald Trump.
Let's just say it went pretty much downhill from there.
But first, remember the old days. Republicans, conservatives, whatever you want to call them, they were tough on crime. Democrats were criticized for being soft on crime. It was all very simple, maybe not entirely accurate or out of context, but simple to understand.
But reality has complicated things for both sides, more so for the conservative tough on crime crowd. The lock them up and throw away the key mentality led to an explosion of the prison population. Many people, mostly people of color, were being locked up for a long time for nonviolent drug offenses. Running prisons and holding prisoners for a long time is expensive. And studies show that just locking people up does not reduce crime and does not help offenders turn their lives around. Suddenly, conservatives were calling for sentencing reform and community-based punishments.
So that brings us to the death penalty. To be elected, really to anything, but certainly to be elected as a Republican, you had to support capital punishment, especially for the most horrific crimes. Ohio has executed 56 people since it resumed the practice in 1999. But now a group of conservatives is pushing Ohio to abolish the death penalty once and for all.
Joining us now to discuss this movement is Josh Culling from the group Conservatives Concerned About the Death Penalty. Josh, welcome to Snollygoster.
Thanks, guys. Glad to be on.
Josh, let's start with the name of your group. It's Conservatives Concerned About the Death Penalty. Why not just say Conservatives Against the Death Penalty?
Probably a little bit of PR, honestly. I'm a latecomer to the group. We just launched our Ohio chapter. There are multiple national chapters around the country. We are concerned. I mean, I'm very concerned about what we're seeing, especially as sort of criminal justice reform movements on both sides of the aisle start to take flight around the country. Some leadership from our Republican President Donald Trump on that, certainly. But we're concerned based on some of the costs that we're seeing, certainly the sanctity of life, and with some of these exonerations that have been happening around the country as we have better access to data and a more efficient criminal justice system. So there's a lot of concern, and hopefully that leads to the death penalty being abolished here in Ohio.
But the choice of language, whether, you know, you say it's kind of PR, but it shows you the... It sort of exemplifies the struggle that conservatives have with this is because they've been supportive of the death penalty for so long. It's been a core principle of theirs. And to just come right out and say abolish is a tough step. So you start with concern and then you go to abolish, right?
Well, sure. I mean, I think what we heard in Columbus on Tuesday when we launched the group at the state capitol, or our chapter of it at least, is a clear focus on this thing getting abolished. And I think we've heard some positive steps in that direction from a very conservative Republican speaker in Ohio, in Larry Householder, and some openness to it from our governor, Mike DeWine. So that's certainly the focus on it. I think the concern comes from, for me personally, my Catholic faith and believing in the sanctity of life. I mean, in Ohio, for every six prisoners put to death, we have one exoneree. That's shocking to me. So I think that's where the concern comes from for me personally.
Do you think movement-wide, is that the biggest concern? Or, we've heard a lot of arguments against the death penalty. If you had to identify a single reason why you would like to move on from it, what is that?
I don't think it comes down to a single reason for me personally and from a lot of the folks that we heard from in the room. I mean, cost is another one, right? You're talking about $1 million per trial, and that's trial cost alone. We're not talking about the years and years of appeals and guys being locked up for that period of time as they await the appeal process to go through. The sanctity of life argument is certainly one, and I just touched on that. And also, it's not really an efficient deterrent. I mean, we haven't seen any evidence that the death penalty is a deterrent for terrible crimes? Do we agree as conservatives in criminal justice, in holding criminals accountable? Absolutely, we do. But this, with the some of the arguments that we make about how the government is not good at running the Bureau of Motor Vehicles or the Post Office, the same thing applies to something much more important, frankly, and that's administering justice in an efficient way and getting it right 100% of the time. If people's lives are at stake and there's even one exoneree, for me personally, that's unacceptable. Life in prison without parole is certainly a terrible punishment and one that fits the crime. I don't think the death penalty needs to be a part of that mix.
Josh, you're making arguments that a lot of Democrats have been making for decades. Do conservatives involved in this movement now concede that anti-death penalty cause, that those people were right from the get-go?
Well, I don't really look at it as a political fight. And I would push back a little bit on this idea that there was sort of this lockstep pro-death penalty position within the Republican Party or the conservative movement. I mean, there's a lot of diversity opinion on these issues, especially when you look at people of faith, Christian faith or otherwise, within the Republican Party. I would say, I think what's interesting here is it's one of the only issues that I see as someone who sort of works in politics and watches politics, where there's movement towards consensus rather than further polarization. So I do think that Republicans and Democrats are coming together on this. And we're not talking about sort of squishy, liberal, moderate Republicans. We're talking about Mike DeWine and Larry Householder in Ohio. My liberal friends think I'm a bad person for how conservative I am.
But Josh, forgive me. I would just say that I don't know if I would couch it as Democrats and Republicans coming together. I would say it more accurately. I think it's Republicans coming to the Democrats' side.
Well, sure. If that's how you want to characterize it, I think that would be accurate. I think on this issue, to have any change, you need conservative leadership because of where the party has, or the conservative side of the aisle has been on some of these issues more broadly in the past. So it's only going to get done if conservatives lead. I think that's why this chapter is so important, and this movement is so important to be led by Republicans.
Let's talk about the basics. Shouldn't someone who kills a child, someone who commits mass murder, someone who kills a police officer, shouldn't that person be put to death for that extremely heinous crime?
They should be punished severely. And I think that life without parole is a very severe crime. It protects people. It protects us from seeing a recurrence of that crime, which is one. Two, does it punish them? And is there a deterrent there? I would argue yes. We get it wrong too often. It's too important to give the government the power to put people to death when they've screwed it up time and again. And when you're talking about taking out a human life, I think that speaks for itself in terms of getting rid of this punishment.
Josh, I'm speaking out of both sides of my mouth here because I was just talking about how there appears to be a coming consensus. Support for the death penalty has declined in the last two decades or so, but the latest Gallup poll shows that 56% of Americans still support it. That's compared to 42% who oppose it. Is this going against the will of the public?
Well, I think, first of all, you're seeing movement. So we look at trend lines, right, in polling, and it's moving towards abolishment. We've seen some polling in Ohio recently that suggests that life without parole is a more popular sentence for even the most heinous crimes than the death penalty. So I look at big trends. I look at where people are moving. I look at how, that there is certainly work to be done. It's why groups like ours are so important. It's why political leaders, like the ones I've mentioned, speaking out, or at least signaling openness, are so important. So yeah, that's our job, is to convince more people of the downsides of the death penalty and of the attractiveness of the alternative.
Your group includes some big names that once played a role in executing people: former Governor Bob Taft, former Ohio Attorney General Jim Petro. Is this a change of heart for members of your group, or just a willingness to go public and go against what many other conservatives believe?
Sure. So I can't speak individually for what caused sort of a conversion by some specific folks. I will say, in the Capitol on Tuesday, we heard some really compelling stories a former staffer for AG Betty Montgomery, who was responsible for putting some of these criminals to death. Former gubernatorial staffers who spoke to how sort of somber those mornings were when we knew that we were going to have an execution. Even a gentleman whose father was murdered, who wanted to see the killer put to death and had a change of heart based on his faith and some other factors. And even a capital punishment juror who voted to execute an accused killer, who then wrote to the governor 20 years later or so, arguing for clemency. So a lot of people arrive at these decisions for a lot of different reasons. I myself was probably sort of softly pro capital punishment early in my days as a Republican. But as you look at the facts on exoneration, as you examine your conscience from a place of Christian faith, or as a taxpayer who looks at the fact that we're not really deterring anything and we're spending millions and millions of dollars, for me, it was a no-brainer. I can only speak for my own sort of conversion on the issue.
You know, Josh, Ohio was once referred to as the Texas of the North. We executed so many people up here. That's not the case anymore. Ohio has not had an execution for 19 months. Future executions are on hold amid an ongoing shortage of lethal injection drugs and some arguments over whether or not Ohio's method of using those drugs amounts to cruel and unusual punishment. We effectively do not have a death penalty in Ohio right now. Why not just let it fade away?
In my opinion, it makes it all the easier to abolish it once and for all. I mean, now we have this vacuum in which we can say, you know what, we're not going to do things this way for all the reasons that I've laid out. So to me, that strengthens the case. And why let this sort of lever remain for future elected officials? We've proven we can live without it.
Prosecutors want to keep the death penalty to punish those who commit the worst crimes and, frankly, to use as leverage to obtain plea bargains. Do they have a point?
I don't think that they've demonstrated their case effectively. I haven't heard any good rebuttals to all the reasons that we are putting forth that this is not working. So, you know, while I am a big supporter of law enforcement and our prosecutors, I think they're getting this one wrong.
You mentioned Larry Householder supports this, the Speaker of the House. Senate President Larry Obhoff says no on the state Senate side. If it does not get any action in the legislature, is your group willing to go to the ballot to settle this?
So that's not part of my role as Board of Advisors to dictate strategy. So I can't really speak for strategy moving forward. I do know that they are aggressively advocating in front of the legislature and the governor. I think we'll exhaust that option in terms of political strategy before we determine sort of the path forward.
Josh Culling from the group Conservatives Concerned About the Death Penalty. Thanks for coming on Snollygoster.
I really enjoyed it, guys. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Josh.
We'll be right back.
On All Sides with Ann Fisher, we cover the topics that affect life in Central Ohio, from immigration to the economy to the continuing opioid crisis.
But the reality is if you don't save someone who's overdosed, they have no opportunity to recover.
Hear thoughtful, in-depth conversations about the issues that matter now. Subscribe to the All Sides with Ann Fisher podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media. Primary election month is here. Early voting is underway here in Ohio. Ohio Democrats, and we suppose some Republicans, are casting ballots for their party's nominee for president. We can safely predict Donald Trump will be the GOP primary nominee winner here. But the Democrats, not as clear.
Not as clear at all. Clear as mud. Ohio Democrats who watched this week's debate on MSNBC certainly saw a show. We just don't know how helpful it was in changing the minds of the undecided.
It was the first time former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg was on the stage, and he got off to a good start, proclaiming he's the one who can win back the White House.
I'm a New Yorker. I know how to take on an arrogant con man like Donald Trump.
So that was a pretty good start. The pileup started after that.
I'd like to talk about who we're running against. A billionaire who calls women fat broads and horse-faced lesbians. And no, I'm not talking about Donald Trump. I'm talking about Mayor Bloomberg.
You should also ask how Mayor Bloomberg in 2004 supported George W. Bush for president.
The mayor says that he has a great record, that he's done these wonderful things. Well, the fact of the matter is he has not managed his city very, very well when he was there.
I've apologized. I've asked for forgiveness. But the bottom line is we stopped too many people, and we've got to make sure that we do something about criminal justice in this country.
He has gotten some number of women, dozens, who knows, to sign non-disclosure agreements, both for sexual harassment and for gender discrimination in the workplace.
We have a very few non-disclosure agreements.
How many is that?
Let me finish.
How many is that?
None of them accuse me of doing anything other than maybe they didn't like the joke I told. And let me just
What was that joke?
It got groans. Whatever it was.
Oh,
there were a lot of groans.
That is, oh my. Elizabeth Warren really successful there with the attacks on, I mean, the things that Michael Bloomberg has said to women. Oh, that was some great politics there by Elizabeth Warren.
He had a tough night. He had a tough hour. I think by the second hour of the debate, he had gained his footing and it recovered a little bit. He went after Bernie Sanders effectively and went after other folks effectively and defended his case more effectively. But that first hour was painful to watch if you were a Mike Bloomberg supporter. He just wasn't ready. He was not ready. He was not prepared to answer the questions we all knew were coming. We all knew stop and frisk, the accusations mm-hmm. of a hostile work environment at Bloomberg, his tax returns. We all knew those questions were coming. He just didn't have answers for them.
The thousands of pages of tax returns, you mean?
Yeah. He said,
use TurboTax?
No. And to his credit, nor he probably can't. So he doesn't pretend to be a regular guy. He says, look, I got a lot of money. I worked hard. I was lucky. And I'm giving it all away. That was one of his better moments. But he had some rough moments at the beginning.
The candidates went after him for a reason, because they see him as a threat. Clearly, he is considered one of the front runners at this point. That is why he was the focal point. We saw it with Joe Biden in the first debate or two. This happens when people are at the front of the pack. The others go after them.
Tom Steyer has spent a lot of money on ads in this campaign. He did not face the assault that Michael Bloomberg did in this debate. Mm-hmm. It's because Michael Bloomberg has a really good chance coming into Super Tuesday. So all the candidates knew that, and they wanted to take him down a peg and use him, Elizabeth Warren especially, use Michael Bloomberg to raise her profile. I would say of all the people last night, she probably won the debate. Bernie Sanders had a good night.
He escaped unscathed. And why is that? Why were people not as aggressive as going after him? Is he really not considered a front runner at this point, despite his performance in Iowa and New Hampshire?
He's the front runner because we have six candidates. He's still at 30%. I mean, that's the plurality right now. Mm-hmm. So as the field consolidates, my guess is the moderates feel that they can overtake him. But that's what Donald Trump used to win the nomination 4 years ago. But right now, Bernie Sanders is in very good shape. He had a good night last night. He made his case. They didn't go after him. He'll do decent in Nevada, and if he keeps it close in South Carolina.
You know, there was a time not that long ago when Joe Biden was the clear front runner, right? We were all basically anointing Joe Biden. He had a fine night on Wednesday night, but, man, this is not last summer, I'll tell you that.
He did much better last night, I thought. He was more poised, more forceful, had more energy. Mm-hmm. It was sort of overshadowed by the whole Bloomberg drama and the other drama on the stage. But I think he certainly helped himself last night, whether helped himself enough to get back in the race. It all comes down to South Carolina. He needs to win South Carolina.
And he should. I mean, he was in South Carolina speaking to people in New Hampshire on New Hampshire primary night. So he's clearly putting all his eggs into the South Carolina basket.
If he doesn't win there, it's over for him. And even if he does win there, he still has a tough road perhaps. But it's really wide open. There is no clear favorite right now for the nomination.
I don't think so either. No, it's great to see. We're continuing to see substantive debates.
Don't write Michael Bloomberg off because he had one bad hour. People last night, of course, you can't look at Twitter because Twitter is just
a bunch of journalists talking to each other.
It's just, and it's far, it's the far, far partisan. You know, it's mm-hmm. Somebody said last night that during the second debate in 2016 between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, Twitter said that Trump lost the debate, and then but the text messages among that person's friends said that Trump was going to get elected. So.
I'm now for our weekly segment, Snollygoster of the Week. It's an award we give out to the shrewdest politician or political move. About a year ago, we poked fun at Republican State Representative Niraj Antani for his very early declaration for state Senate.
Well, nearly 3 years before the election, we have a candidate for governor. Democrat John Cranley, the mayor of Cincinnati, has launched his 2022 campaign for governor. Apparently, he's been traveling around the state for months trying to build his name recognition. So he gets our snollygoster of the week for not wasting any time to run for governor. We just had a campaign for governor.
Who was it that brought this to our attention? This
Niraj Antani himself.
Good job, Niraj. Thank you very much for doing that. He must be a big fan of the show. We did poke some fun at Niraj. We had had some fun at Niraj's expense. So thank you very much, Niraj Antani, for recommending our snollygoster of the week, Democrat John Cranley, the latest candidate for Ohio governor
in
2020.
Frankly,
early
if a Democrat has a chance to win, they have to start now.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't blame them. Actually, you know what? John Kasich started running for governor very early, unofficially. He was going to all the Republican Lincoln Day dinners around the state a good year before he officially declared his candidacy. So it's probably smart but shrewd on John Granley's part.
That will do it for this week's Snollygoster. If you're new to the podcast, welcome. As always, be sure to tell your friends about us. Give us a good review on iTunes. Put up a flyer on your neighborhood, a telephone pole, whatever you have to do. Get the word out.
Yard sign. Yard signs work.
They do work,
We want to give thanks to our intern extraordinaire, Jack Long, for his production help. I'm Mike Thompson.
And I'm Steve Brown for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.